This is chapter 21, and it's called Muhammad Ali's Vision, and it's about a very young boy. Do you remember the story that told how the Bab was made a prisoner in the castle of Maku? Yeah, I knew you would. And how after another time, he was sent still to another prison? But no matter where he went, his enemies couldn't keep the people away from him. They were attracted to him, and they came to love the Bab and to follow him more and more, wherever he went. You would be interested, I think, in hearing about a young man named Muhammad Ali, about 18 years old. He heard the message of the Bab, and he wished to go to the Bab, even though the Bab was then in prison. The young boy Ali said he would be glad to die for the Bab at any time. His stepfather, however, who was a very important man, wouldn't allow Muhammad Ali to leave the city. And finally, he locked the young man in the house and kept a strict watch over him, because he didn't believe the Bab's message, and he was afraid that his son must have lost his mind to believe in this person. Then one day, a surprising thing happened. Up to this time, Muhammad Ali had wept most of the time because he couldn't go to the Bab. He loved him, he wanted to be with him, and permission was refused, so he wept a good deal. But now, however, suddenly he had become very joyous, and instead of weeping, he was smiling. And his family was puzzled by that. They thought, what's happened to this young man to change him so? Would you like to know the reason for the change? Well, this is it. All one day, Ali had prayed to the Bab to allow him to see his face. He prayed so hard that at last he seemed to become unconscious. And he had a vision. In his vision, he heard the voice of the Bab calling to him. And the voice told him to rise. And when he did so, he seemed to be looking into the smiling face of the Bab, into his smiling eyes. And filled with joy and thankfulness, the young man rushed forward and fell at the feet of the Bab. And the Bab said, "Rejoice! The hour is approaching when, in this very city, I shall be suspended before the eyes of the multitude and shall fall a victim to the fire of the enemy. And I shall choose no one except you to share with me the cup of martyrdom. So rest assured that the promise which I give you shall be fulfilled." Do you know what the Bab meant by those words? Well, he meant that after a while, he, the Bab, would be put to death in that very city, Tabriz, with many people watching him, and at that time he would choose that very young man, Muhammad Ali, to die with him. That was his promise. You could see it would be a very great blessing to die with the promised one of God. And all the Bab's friends wished that they might be the one to do so, but only this young man, he said, was to be chosen. Well, you can imagine about that promise, how happy that made Ali. He woke up from his dream or from his vision, and he was a changed person. He didn't care what they did to him now. He knew that someday soon, the Bab would come through that city, he would see him, he'd throw himself at the Bab's feet, and he would die with him in martyrdom. No one could ask for anything more than that, and nothing could make him sad any longer. He said he felt as though he were living in an ocean of joy. And the Bab's voice kept ringing in his ears, and he seemed to see him many times during the day and the night. And his family, especially his father, couldn't understand the change that had taken place in him, how calm he seemed and so happy. And so he allowed him now to be free and not be a prisoner any longer. And from that day, Ali lived quietly and happily with his family and his friends. But he was waiting for the time the Bab would come through the city, and he would join him. And, of course, they all loved this young boy very much. And when he died with the Bab in martyrdom, as the Bab had promised, all of the city wept for him. This is chapter 22, and it tells the story of the trial of the Bab. Well, you can imagine that by this time, greater and greater crowds of people were coming to hear the Bob's message. But almost always, the city leaders and their friends were his enemies and wished him harm. Do you know why? Because some of them felt very proud because they had studied more than other people, and they could explain the Quran to them. And others were proud because they had a great deal of money, or they had a high position in the government. And they were all afraid that if most of the people became followers of the Bab, they themselves would not be so important. They might lose their money or their positions. And so everywhere the Bab went, they treated him cruelly. Of course, there were some among them, no matter how much money they had or whatever their positions, had the pure heart, and they understood and accepted the Bab. And all those who were with him for a while became his friends. Even the animals seemed to love the Bab. For if they were fierce, they became gentle when the Bab was with them. In fact, here's a story of what once happened. It's a story of a prince in whose home the Bab was staying. He wished to see if the Bab were a brave person. And so he gave the Bab a very wild horse to ride. The groom who had charge of the horses went to the Bab secretly and asked him, "Please don't ride this horse." He told the Bab that the horse had thrown everyone who had tried to ride it. The Bab thanked the groom, but told him to leave him, the Bab, in the hands of God, and that all would be well. And sure enough, when the Bab walked quietly up and began to pat that fierce horse and put his foot in the stirrup, the animal stood quite still and let the Bab get up on its back. And it continued to be gentle until the Bab had returned from his ride. That happened in a place called Uramiya, now called Rezaye. I saw that place. I stood there where the Bab came on that horse, to the public bath where he rode, and that's why I was so excited to tell you about this story. You know, there are many people who believe, and then when other circumstances come, they lose their faith. So hundreds of people followed the Bab in the city because he had ridden this wild stallion. And the Bab said, "Do they think that if they believe that they will not be put to the test?" Because God tests people when they say they believe. And later on, when they heard the news that the Bab had been martyred in Tabriz and killed, they turned away. Just like with Christ, remember, of his 12 disciples, one had betrayed him, one had denied him, and there were a handful at the foot of the cross. That's the way it is. But the people who hear the messenger of God, they can't resist him, and the crowds grow and grow. And so many people followed the Bab on his way to Tabriz for this examination and trial that his enemies, the religious leaders, said, "Don't let him come into the city. Keep him outside the city, or there'll be trouble." They sent word that the Bab had to camp outside the city of Tabriz and not enter until they were ready. And then they held a meeting for the Bab, and they sent for him to come before them. They wanted to question him. When the Bab arrived, he found that every chair except one was taken. People pressed in on every side. As the Bab walked through the crowd and took the empty chair, suddenly the people seemed to feel his power and his attraction. All that had been talking noisily together stopped. That's what the Bab told them. You see, they had been waiting for him, and yet when he came, they wouldn't receive him. They couldn't believe that this was the one who walked among them and talked with them. They asked the Bab many questions, all of which he answered, but still they refused to believe that he was the promised one. They treated him shamefully and sent him again to prison. "I am the promised one," he said three times, as it was with Christ, remember? They said, "Are you the Son of God?" And he says, "Thou hast said it." But they didn't believe. They didn't really want to believe or didn't want to know. They wanted the Bab to say something that they could use in his own words to persecute him or to slay him. That's the way it is. Well, of course, the news of this gathering traveled all over the land and made many, many more friends for the Bab. And those who hadn't been his followers now became his followers. And many of them thought that the religious leaders hadn't treated him fairly at all. And they, too, became his friends. And so you see that whatever they tried to do against the Bab did not succeed. It only made the people love him more and more. And then, because of that examination, they couldn't find anything wrong to take his life, so they scourged him. They beat him with the bastinado, scourged like Christ. But he continued to pour out his teachings for the generation, the regeneration of mankind. And all you wonderful children, you young people, I hope you will take up the torch and teach the word too. You know, just think, remember the very first night when the Bab talked to Mullah Hussein, he mentioned us, the people of the West, and he said we should come out of our cities and serve God and awaken the world. Well, I hope that will happen in your home and your family, and that you will be among the heroes and heroines of God, because there's nothing more important in the whole world than that. Talk about a dramatic story and something that would make a marvelous movie in color with a great big screen and excitement. That's this story, Chapter 23, The Defense of Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. You're going to love this story. This is one of the reasons, really, that I became a Baha'i. My wife Marguerite gave me the book, The Dawnbreakers, when I first heard about the Baha'i faith. And I wanted to become a Babi. I hadn't heard about Baha'u'llah yet. But for a while, I think I was the only American in all of the United States that was a Babi. And then, of course, when I heard about Baha'u'llah, I became a follower of the Baha'i faith, too. And partly because of this wonderful story about Fort Tabarsi. Of course, you remember Mullah Hussein. He was the one to whom the Bab first told the secret that he was the Promised One. And ever since that important night in Shiraz, Mullah Hussein had been telling everyone about the Bab. One day a messenger came to Mullah Hussein, bringing him the Bab's turban and telling him to go and help Qudus. Qudus, you remember, was the one who crossed the desert with the Bab on the way to Mecca. He was the last of the letters of the living to meet the Bab. Mullah Hussein was the first. As soon as Mullah Hussein received the message, he mounted his horse and set forth with 202 of his companions. Wherever they stopped, they gave the people the message of the new day and selected some of them who believed the message to go with them on their journey. Once when they had stopped to rest, Mullah Hussein said to his companions, "Whoever is unprepared for the great trials that lie before us, let him now repair to his home and give up this journey. I, together with 72 of my companions, shall suffer death for the well-beloved. Whoso was unable to renounce the world, let him now, at this very moment, depart, for later on he will be unable to escape." Well, of course, you know what Mullah Hussein meant, that those who were afraid to die for God should leave them now before it was too late. 20 of them left and returned to their homes. And then Mullah Hussein told the rest to leave behind everything they owned, except their horses and their swords, so that the people would see that they didn't want any of the things of this world. They only wished to teach God's message. Many times the members of this little band were forced to fight for their lives. Their leader would never let them be the first to fight, however. They fought only when they had to. All were amazed at Mullah Hussein's bravery and the mysterious strength which seemed to come to him whenever it was needed. His enemies trembled even at the sound of his name. The night before they arrived at the shrine of Sheikh Tabarsi, the guardian of that shrine dreamed that Mullah Hussein had come there with a great number of people. He dreamed that these heroes had stayed there, winning every battle against their enemies, no matter how large the numbers against them. And one night, the Prophet of God joined them. This was his dream. The prophets, of course, you know, are those divine teachers we've been hearing about, the Bab and Baha'u'llah. When Mullah Hussein came the next morning, the guardian knew immediately that this was the one he had seen in his dream when he arrived with all his companions. And the guardian told Mullah Hussein about his dream. Mullah Hussein said to the keeper of the shrine, "All that you have witnessed will come to pass here." So Mullah Hussein decided to build a fort near the shrine so they could protect themselves. And at once he set his men to work. Many times they had to stop and fight the people of the neighboring towns, who did all they could to harm them and prevent them from going on their way. But always they drove their enemies away, and at last the fort was finished. It was just finished when Mullah Hussein received word that Baha'u'llah would visit them. You remember in the dream of the guardian of the shrine that the Prophet of God came to join them there? Well, this Prophet was Baha'u'llah. Those who were with Mullah Hussein didn't know at that time who Baha'u'llah was. And they didn't understand why their leader, Mullah Hussein, was so happy, so overjoyed, that he even forgot that they were present when Baha'u'llah was there. When Baha'u'llah arrived, no one could sit down until Mullah Hussein gave the word. And he forgot himself until Baha'u'llah told him to be seated and the others. Baha'u'llah told them that he was very well satisfied with the fort that they had built, and that the only one thing that was lacking to make it perfect was the presence of Qudus. That Qudus must be with them. Of course, Qudus at that time was imprisoned in a town called Sari. But Baha'u'llah told Mullah Hussein to send 6 men to that town, and that Qudus would be released and allowed to join them. Well, they couldn't understand how that was going to happen because he was a prisoner. Before Baha'u'llah left them, he said, "Whatever may befall you, victory is yours, a victory which will be complete and certain." So, after he had gone, Mullah Hussein followed his orders. And as Baha'u'llah had asked him, Mullah Hussein sent 6 men to Sari for Qudus. He then told the others that they must treat Qudus as they would the Bab himself. He was so important. "As to myself," Mullah Hussein added, "you must consider me as his lowly servant." Qudus arrived at the fort during the night. And when a messenger came saying that he was near, Mullah Hussein and 100 of his men went out on foot to meet him. Each man carried 2 lighted candles, so that the forest was illuminated about them. And as Qudus rode back among them to the fort, they sang hymns of joy. "You know, I had the real bounty of walking along that same path from Sari and the green forests of Mazinderan, on the path by which Qudus came back. And I could see him mounted and the others holding lighted candles, and I could almost hear them singing on their way to Fort Sheikh Tabarsi." Well, every day after that, no matter how fierce the enemy was in attacking the fort, Qudus always kept his time to pray with his companions. Nothing could keep him from speaking in this way to God, whom he loved and trusted. Of course, there was much suffering ahead for them, as there had been for the early followers of Christ and the early followers of every messenger of God. But these dawnbreakers, these heroes, were happy to sacrifice everything they had for God, so that you and I could learn about this wonderful faith, and so that we could sacrifice and teach ourselves too, so that the whole world might become a better place. And we can't do any work that's more important than that, can we? This is chapter 24, The Siege. We're still there in this wonderful dramatic story of the defense of Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. For many weeks, Qudus and Mullah Hussein and their companions were kept inside the fort by those who wished to harm them. They were surrounded by soldiers and by cannon. They couldn't go out for food because everyone who did was shot. And at last, even water became scarce. When someone spoke to Qudus about this, he said, "God willing, this very night, a downpour of rain will overtake our opponents, followed by a heavy snowfall." And sure enough, that very night a heavy rain fell and ruined the ammunition of the enemy. Enough water was gathered within the fort to last the men for a long time. And the next night there came a fall of snow so heavy that no one in the neighborhood of the fort could remember one like it, even in the middle of winter. So you see, that which caused a great deal of trouble to the enemy was a blessing to those in the fort, to those dawnbreakers. The little band inside the fort knew that the large army outside was getting ready to attack them. There were now 313 of them. And you know, at one time there were 12,000 soldiers surrounding them. Can you imagine such a thing? So Caduce decided, since they were closing in, they'd better rush out suddenly and try to drive them back or scatter them. And 2 hours after sunrise, he and two others mounted their horses and rode out of the fort, and the rest followed on foot. As soon as they were out, they all shouted as loud as they could, "Lord of the Age, Ya Sahib wa Zaman." That was one of the names of the divine teacher whom they were expecting, the Lord of the Age. You know, we know that in the Baha'i teachings it says that it is better to be killed than to kill. Well, these heroes at Sheikh Tabarsi had not yet read the Bab's words, "The slaying of a soul is outside of the religion of God," meaning we shouldn't kill. So they followed after the pattern of their previous religious training, which said, "Don't attack anybody, but if you're attacked, defend yourself." So that's what they did. Repeatedly, Mullah Hussein and Caduce tried to persuade the enemies to permit them to go on their way peacefully without shedding any innocent blood. You know, here's a wonderful story. This is not in the book, but I remember it as I stood there on the plain of Barfurush, and then when I stood there at Sheikh Tabarsi. Just think what a wonderful movie. Picture this. There's the plain. And one of the leaders of the king's army told this story as a true story that I'm going to tell you now. He said that one day Mullah Hussein came out into the open field by himself, and leaning upon his lance held in his hand, he called out, "O people, why without investigation of the truth of the Bab's mission do you act so cruelly toward us? Be ashamed before God, the creator of the universe, and give us passage." Well, the king's soldier said that all the soldiers on horseback and the others were so moved by Mullah Hussein's eloquence and their hearts so touched, he was afraid they might defect and go over to the other side. So he ordered that they open up fire, and he ordered them to shout out loud and drown out Mullah Hussein's voice. And 3 times, Mullah Hussein, standing alone, heroically leaning on his lance, he said, "Is there anyone who will help me? Is there anyone who will help me? Is there anyone who will help me?" And all of the soldiers heard it, and some of them wept, and the horsemen were so visibly affected that they feared they might give in, and again they ordered their guns to be fired and their shouts to be raised and to beat their swords against the metal of their harnesses to drown out his eloquent words. And finally Mullah Hussein looked toward the heavens and he said, "O God, we have completed the proof. So be it." And then the battle began, and they attacked on all sides, and they were victorious. But isn't that a beautiful picture, to see that out there in the plains? Well, the great roars of their shouts and the glitter of the sun on their weapons frightened the enemy, and they ran in all directions, leaving behind their possessions. And not one of them from the fort lost his life in that engagement. Caduce wouldn't let his men follow those who were running away. He didn't wish to harm anyone if it were not necessary. He just wanted to show them the power of God so that the people would allow him and his followers to give their message and go peacefully on their way. This same thing happened again and again. "Mount your steeds, O heroes of God," Mullah Hussein would say, and the tiny army in the fort would suddenly rush out shouting, "Lord of the Age, Ya Sahib wa Zaman," and always they were able to drive back that large trained army that had come against them. In one of these battles, Caduce was struck by a bullet and wounded in the mouth and throat. But Mullah Hussein, with a sword in each hand and followed by the rest of his men, drove the enemy back, and they returned to the fort with Caduce, who soon was well again. And at one time Baha'u'llah started to join them, but he and those with them were captured by the enemy and held prisoners. In this way, Baha'u'llah was kept from being with those who were slain at the fort. And that's a good and wonderful thing in the plan of God. Otherwise, he might have perished with them. But you see, this is the way God takes care of his cause. In one of those battles, Mullah Hussein lost his life. It happened this way. During the fighting, Mullah Hussein's horse became entangled in a tent rope, and before it could get away, a bullet struck Mullah Hussein in the chest. He fell from his horse, staggered a few steps, and the hero of God fell to the ground. Two of his companions carried him back to the fort. And there in a fort, a strange thing happened in the fort. Although Mullah Hussein was unconscious when they carried him in, Qudus told the others to leave them alone. He said he wished to talk to Mullah Hussein. And through a crack in the door, one of the men saw what happened. As soon as the two were alone, Qudus called Mullah Hussein, who arose and came and sat at his feet, and the others could hear him answering questions and talking back and forth. They talked together this way for almost 2 hours, and then the door opened and Qudus came out. "I have bade my last farewell to him," he said. He explained that he had told Mullah Hussein many things which he was not ready to hear before. When the others went in, Mullah Hussein was already dead. There was a smile on Mullah Hussein's face, and he looked as if he had just fallen asleep. Mullah Hussein was buried neath the shrine of Sheikh Tabarsi. I stood there with the bowed head by the tree where Mullah Hussein was buried, and I remembered the words of Baha'u'llah, who said, "So great was this hero of God that the very dust above his grave had a special power." The Bab said similar things. Baha'u'llah said, "If it weren't for Mullah Hussein, that God would not have ascended to his throne of glory." And the Bab said that the dust was so sacred that it would bring joy to the disconsolate and healing to the sick just to be there. Isn't that beautiful? And later, the bodies of 31 others who died in the battle were laid to rest in the same place on the other side of the shrine. They had all given their lives for God's cause, which was one of the most glorious things they could possibly do. 50% of the letters of the living gave their lives in that heroic encounter. And as they were lowered into the earth, Qudus said, "Let those of us alive take heed of these martyrs of our faith, that we may all be as united in life as they are in death." You see, with their life's blood, they watered the tree of life, the tree of the faith of the Bab and Baha'u'llah, so it could grow and shelter all mankind. One historical account said, "The whole world marveled at the manner of their sacrifice, their deeds, their fortitude, and their courage, and their bodily endurance. Such were the heroes of Fort Sheikh Tabarsi." We're coming now to the end of that mighty encounter at Sheikh Tabarsi. This is chapter 25. The death of Qudus. After Mullah Hussein left them, very hard times came to the fort. The enemy would let no one in or out, and soon they could get nothing to eat. But with Qudus they were very happy, and they forgot they were hungry. If they began to feel weak and ill, they had only to look at his joyous face and hear his inspiring words to feel strong again, and able to meet any test and do anything. One day, a cannonball from the enemy fell inside the fort and rolled to where Qudus stood. He showed no fear whatever, rolled it with his toe and pushed it aside with his foot, and he told the companions that they need not be afraid of the enemy. Each one of them had an appointed time to die. Until that time, nothing could harm them. But if they should let the sound of the guns and the enemy make them afraid, they would deprive themselves of God's protection. That meant that if they were afraid, because of this fear, they wouldn't be protected. They must know that God would care for them. They must be confident. And I think that's something for all of us to remember, isn't it? That we have to have faith and be sure in God's promises. Well, not long after this, the enemy decided that they just weren't going to be able to capture that fort and those brave souls in it, even though it was such a small handful and they had so many soldiers and so much power. They just couldn't win. So they decided to try to win the victory in a different way. It's a wicked thing that they did, really. They determined that they would send a promise to those in the fort that if they would only come out of the fort, they would allow them to return safely to their homes and forget all the past. what their plan was, that when the heroes of God left the shelter of the fort, they would seize them and do as they pleased with them. So the captain of the enemy forces sent a copy of the holy book, their own holy book, to those in the fort, and promised that they should be protected if they would come out. They promised it on the holy book. Caduce felt that the captain was not telling the truth, but since he had so much honor for that holy book himself, they must trust him, he told his companions. They must show that they had more respect for the word of God and the holy book than their enemies. And so they all marched out, and that was the end of Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. Caduce wore the green turban which the Bab had sent him, and he rode the horse sent by the prince, who was at the head of the army of the enemy. And everything happened exactly as Caduce had feared. Those wicked people paid no attention to their promise. The fort was completely destroyed, leveled to the ground, hoping that history would never hear of it anymore. But you see, here we are way off in this far land talking about it. Thousands of people all over the world telling these stories. But they thought they could stop history. The fort was demolished, and all the companions of Caduce were either put to death or were sold as slaves. And as for Caduce himself, the prince for a time protected him. Later, however, the religious leaders, who had always been his enemies, ordered Caduce to come before them and answer their questions. And the prince knew very well that no matter what was said, they intended to put Caduce to death. And so at last he himself gave in, and he said, "I wash my hands of all responsibility for any harm that may befall this innocent man. You are free to do with him as you wish." "You yourselves," the prince said, "will be answerable to God on the day of judgment for your actions." That sounds like Pontius Pilate, doesn't it? Who said he could find no harm in Christ, and he told the people, "Do with him as you wish." And then the prince called for his horse and rode away and left Caduce at the mercy of his enemies, as a cowardly thing to do, really. And so there, in the public square in Barfarouche, his home city, they put Caduce to death in such a cruel way that when the Bab heard about it in his prison and about what had happened at the fort of Sheikh Tabarsi, tears rained from the Bab's eyes, and for 9 days he would see none of his friends, and he was unable to write for 6 long months. His heart was so touched. But Caduce was not angry with those who put him to death. In his suffering he was heard to say, "Forgive, O my God, the trespasses of this people. Deal with them in thy mercy, for they know not what we have already discovered and cherished. They have not found the promised one as we have. Show them, O God, the way of truth, and turn their ignorance into faith." So you see, Caduce was sorry for them because they didn't know about the Bab and Baha'u'llah as he did. And that was the greatest treasure in the world, reason for living on the earth. Nothing else was important when he'd found that. And so that's how Caduce died, as Mullah Hussein had done, for the cause of God. And as the Bab knew that later he too would die for the cause of God. But all the time, more and more people believed their message. That was all they cared about or thought about. And it went from Persia, 2 countries in the time of the Bab, 15 countries in the time of Baha'u'llah, 35 in the time of Abdu'l-Baha, 100, 200, over 300 countries now, approaching 100,000 centers all over the world where they know about the Bab and Baha'u'llah. Nothing can stay the sound of the onrushing hoofbeats of Baha'u'llah's spiritual battalions until they conquer the hearts of the whole world, thanks to these heroes of God. And I hope that after you've read these stories and heard these stories, you too will want to arise and teach and teach and teach and tell the people the good news, so they'll feel better and the world won't be sad and discouraged as it is now. And next time, I'm going to tell you the story of the wisest man in all of Persia. Imagine that. So when you come next time, bring a friend. Good. This is chapter 27, and this is the story I promised you about Vahid, the wisest of all the Persians. It's a lovely story. I want to tell you just a little bit about Vahid before we begin reading the story. I like to tell this story very much. You see, Vahid was considered one of the wisest men in all of Persia, if not the wisest. And that wasn't our idea or the Baha'i's idea. The king and the prime minister thought that was true, and they chose him to find out if what the Bab said was true. He was so famous that the king, the Shah, sent Vahid to visit the Bab and find out if he really was the expected promised one. And you know what? The king said that whatever Vahid decided, the king would accept. Well, Vahid planned because of his knowledge and his wisdom that, of course, with a few questions, he would overwhelm the Bab with his own knowledge and lead him back as his slave to the capital city and to the king, defeated and humbled. Instead, Vahid found out that the Bab was indeed exactly who he said he was, the promised one. And Vahid believed in him and accepted his truth and began to teach himself every place. In fact, he never went back to the capital city at all. He wrote a report and told the king and the prime minister that the Bab was the promised one and his message the truth. But they refused to believe Vahid. They said he had been enchanted and had fallen under the spell of a sorcerer. Can you imagine? So you see, Vahid was another brave leader who believed the Bab's message and told the people about it, every place. And because of his faith, the governor sent soldiers out to fight with Vahid and scatter his friends. When Vahid heard them coming, he told one of his followers to take 6 men and go out to meet them. Well, that seems a very few men, doesn't it, to meet trained soldiers. But you remember Fort Sheikh Tabarsi, and listen to what happened here. Vahid told them to shout 7 times the words, Allahu Akbar. That means God is the most great. And at the 7th time, they were to rush forward and scatter the enemy. And the 7 men had such faith that they seemed suddenly to become much stronger, and they had no trouble in scattering the soldiers. That shows you what a wonderful thing faith can do and will help us if we're under the protection of God. Well, that night, Vahid told those who were with him to go quietly away. His wife with the children were sent to the home of her father so that they might be safe. Then in the middle of the night, Vahid left the city without anyone seeing him. His 2 oldest sons and 2 other companions accompanied him. You know, that was in Yazd. He had a beautiful home in Yazd and also one in Nehriz, and that's where he was going, and that's where he would be martyred. I visited Yazd, and I saw the beautiful door to that house of Vahid in Yazd. He was a very wealthy man. It was a palatial residence with marvelous furniture. And Vahid said that he had built it just so it could be demolished in the path of God. For he said he had found a treasure so priceless that all the possessions of the earth were nothing more than a heap of bones. And he was happy to give up everything, wealth, position, all, and serve the cause of God. It's a wonderful lesson for us there, too. So that's what happened there. And then he was on his way to Nehriz. They traveled now, stopping at villages on the way, giving the message wherever they went, telling the people about the Bab and the new day which had dawned. At last they reached Nehriz, and there Vahid gave his message again, and more people came to hear him. Crowds thronged around him because he was so wise and so eloquent. And there were many now that were afraid. They feared that he would take away their position, and so the governor prepared to send soldiers against them. He told those who came with him, Vahid did, that they should go to an old fort not far away. It was a fort called Khaja, and to make it as strong as possible. And later he too came to live in the fort. So in a way it's a story of yet another fort. And sure enough, the governor would not let them live in peace. Again and again his army attacked the fort, where there were only 72 men, 313 at Sheikh Tabarsi, 72 in Fort Khaja. Many of these 72 were either old men or young boys, and yet every time they rushed forth with their cry, Allahu Akbar, they frightened the enemy and scattered them. Of course, that's the same thing that happened in the siege of Tabarsi, wasn't it? And like the leader of the enemy at Tabarsi, the governor at last decided that he just couldn't conquer these people inside the fort in a fair battle, even though it was just a handful of men and boys in the fort. He decided the best way was to trick them. So he sent a message to Vahid, telling him that he and his friends had not understood what Vahid wanted. They thought he wanted to be a great leader in the city,
They didn't know he was only teaching religion. They said it was a lie, of course, but they thought they could fool him. And now they said they knew that Vahid only wanted to give his message. And if he would come out of the fort and come to them, they would make peace and he and his followers could go home free. If he would not do this, they would all be killed. Well, like Khadus at Tabarsi, Vahid knew very well they did not mean it, that they weren't sincere. But he felt that he should take the chance to deliver his message even to the enemy. So he and the few he took with him went to the meeting, and they were well treated there. Their enemies dared do nothing while Vahid's friends were still back in the fort. And so they made Vahid send a letter to the fort telling all of them that everything was fine and to come to the headquarters of the army. Knowing that the governor was planning to kill them as soon as they came out of the fort, Vahid secretly wrote a second letter telling his companions to stay exactly where they were in the fort. The messenger was to destroy the first letter and take the second letter of Vahid to the fort for their protection. Unhappily, this messenger was not loyal nor true to Vahid. He destroyed the second letter. Instead, he took the first letter to the fort. And when they came out of the fort, they were scattered and most of them were killed. And after that, the governor and his friends were no longer afraid, and they put to death Vahid and those who had come with him. And that's the way another brave man, one of the bravest, died for the cause of God. But he had made many, many friends to carry on his work. And you know, in a book called The Traveler's Narrative, it tells us that of those chiefly responsible for these cruelties to Vahid and his companions, all of them came to a bad end and died overwhelmed with calamity. Well, you can see how many important and wonderful souls accepted the Bab, and Vahid was one of the greatest. He has been called a unique and peerless figure of his age. That means that no one was like Vahid. He was the best. He was also called illustrious, and even the king and prime minister said that Vahid was the wisest of the Persians. And so Vahid laid down his life for the cause of God and for the one he loved, the Bab. And Vahid was martyred only 10 days before the martyrdom of his beloved Bab. Although the story of Hujjat, another one of the great heroes of God, and his martyrdom took place after that of the Bab, I thought I'd tell his story here. So if you'll turn to page 61, we'll tell you his story, and then after that the story of the martyrdom of the Bab. Sort of save that, you know. That was called something unique in the religious history of the world, and I didn't say that. An historian said that, and not a Baha'i. And it's going to be true, as you'll see. But now we're going to tell you about Hujjat. This is chapter 27. He was a wonderful man, brave, afraid of no one, very eloquent, spoke with great authority. It's a story of someone who, like the other heroes of God, was willing to die, if necessary, for the Bab and for his cause. Hujjat lived in Zanjan. He was a very wise man, and the people loved him a great deal, and wherever he went, they flocked to hear him speak. But when Hujjat heard about the Bab and began to give his message to the people, the religious leaders of his city rose up against him. Isn't it strange how they always did this and do this whenever the truth is told? When Hujjat heard about the siege of Fort Sheikh Tabarsi, he longed to go there and help the brave men in the fort. At that time, however, Hujjat was a prisoner in Tehran, and he couldn't go. A short time later, he escaped by disguising himself and went back to his home, Zanjan. Men, women, and children came out to meet him because he was a hero, even before he heard about the words of the Bab. He was such an outstanding person, and they wanted to help him in any way they could. The people of Zanjan were now warned that anyone who listened to Hujjat would be in danger of losing their lives. Well, of course, this didn't frighten most of Hujjat's friends. They decided, however, that they'd take refuge in a nearby fort. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? like the fort of Sheikh Tabarsi and like the fort of Khaja at Nehriz. So that's what they did. They took refuge in a fort that was called Ali Martin Khan. Three wonderful forts. I hope someday I can write a book about those three forts. So they took refuge there. And whenever the governor's army would attack the fort, a few of those within it would rush out shouting, Ya Sahib al-Zaman, the Lord of the Age, just like they did at Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. And so fierce did they sound, and so loud did they shout, that the enemy would scatter before them. Even the people in the town trembled with fright at their cry, which sounded to them almost like thunder. Like those other followers of the Bab, however, they would only kill to save the lives of their women and their children and their own lives. They would never attack first. Trouble came in the fort, however, because soon they were without enough food to eat, like they were at Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. And all they could get came from a few women who were able to reach the fort, and they had to pay a great deal of money for the food. At this time, a young girl from the village nearby wished to help them, so she disguised herself as a man, and taking a gun, a sword, and a shield, she rushed forth to...